Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo broadcasting from the Big Apple, New York City. Yes, I'm here on a business trip and it is absolutely amazing. I would never have thought I'd even left the Northwest. They are having just as much rain as we were having when I was there. So we are here today to talk about a wonderful, wonderful book. It's a true story. It's about a fabulous dog by the name of Cody. And my guest today is Jeff Masaryk. And he is a man that has a love for dogs that's equal to mine. And I'm sure for those of you listening, equal to the passion you have for animals as well. Jeff, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, I'll tell you, I would recommend to anybody reading this book if they have a box of Kleenex on the side as certain portions of the story. You have managed, in writing about Cody's journey, you have managed to capture so much of the special talents of the dog, but more than that, the story of the relationship that you and Cody had, which I think is so meaningful. Now, before we go into chatting, I want my listeners to know that, obviously, you're an author. You also do a lot of speaking, and you live in Northern Illinois, and your wife, obviously, has just as much of a love for dogs as you do. But I want to read this poem that you have in your book called Cody's Gift. How do I describe the connection that is us? You came to me as such an especial gift, smiling in your special way. You were never there before. Now you'll never be gone. How does this happen to people? How do we live our lives, taking walks, visiting friends, cooking dinner, not knowing there's something yet to come to make it all seem the more like the glow around a star? And I will finish the rest of that poem later on, but just that one section is a great way to introduce your book. Jeff, tell us how you came to get this feisty little border collie, quoting your words from your book, and how did she end up becoming your very special teacher?
Well, I'll be happy to answer that. And I want to also make the point right up front that that lovely poem was written by my sister-in-law, Roseanne, who knew Cody from the time we got her, and she knew of that relationship between us. And so when she wrote that not long after Cody left the planet, it really touched both of us, Andrea and I, in a profound way. And so I just knew that in some way it would be used. In any event, with that said, talking about how Cody came into our lives really is a story of divine order, in my view. My first book is a spirituality book, so I'm kind of inclined that direction, and I've certainly come to believe over the years that we do create our own reality and how we flow our energy and stuff, but there's also guiding forces that seem to be moving us towards a certain direction in certain points in life and key decision points, whatever. And I found with the Cody story, and it's really in detail in the book, that Cody came to us in a very unique way. I mean, it was just kind of all come together, kind of. You couldn't have predicted it. You couldn't have scripted it any better, in that we just happened to see a newspaper when we live in the Chicago area, and I was down in Galesburg, Illinois, which is about 190 miles southwest of here. And we were looking for a dog, and I wanted a border collie, and I just saw that this newspaper happened to be on Andrea's grandparents' kitchen table. And I saw an ad for border collies. It said males and females, I think five, price $150, call this number. And I thought, well, there's got to be something about this. And so that began the adventure. And ultimately, and the book details, you know, much more about how it all came together. We wound up the very next day being in a little town called Roanoke, Illinois, and there wasn't five border collies. There was only one. And she was the cutest little ball of black and white fur you'll ever see. And she was with her front paws up on the little fence that she was inside of, just wag our tail like crazy, like, well, God, it's about time you got here, you know. It was the coolest thing. So that's how she became a part of our family. And, you know, I was asked by someone else recently, well, you know, would you recommend people just kind of go to a newspaper and you know, just sight unseen, go drive into the country to pick up a dog? And, you know, I'm looking back, I don't know, I don't think I'd recommend anything like that to anybody. It just so happens that that's the way we were guided, and the result was a beautiful result. And it just depends on the circumstance, you know.
Well, I'll have to share with you just a little quick story. We love Scottish Terriers. You have a Border Collie, but my husband and I just absolutely love little Terriers. And we got, after we had gotten married, our very first Scottish Terrier came about because he happened to pick up a newspaper. He had been transferred to another state for work, and we didn't have a dog, and he wanted it so badly, and he happened to pick up a newspaper, and lo and behold, there was an ad for Scottish Terriers. So I have such an empathy for your story, but I would agree. I have this thing about bonding with animals. I want to see if the animal really wants to be with me. And in your book, you talk about the intuitive sense of an animal. And it's amazing how you can be in what I'd call a grouping of dogs. If you just sit down, you don't even bother to try to pet any of them, you'll find that there will be those that don't want anything to do with you. They'll walk away from you.
Yeah.
And here in your experience, this little person was saying, gee whiz, I've been waiting. Here I am. Come on, take me. It's time for me to go.
Right.
I just think that's so wonderful, because not all dogs respond that way. And have you found in your experience with dogs that this is something that you pay attention to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just for example, today I stopped by a humane society that I know for many years. We actually have gotten a couple of dogs in our family from it. It's in Hinsdale, Illinois, south of here. And went to go see a person that works there I hadn't seen for a long time to show her a copy of the book. And I just went down through the kennels, you know, just to say hello to the dogs. And some of them just ignored me. But like you say, there were a couple that, you know, clearly kind of got up in my face. Hey, how you doing? You know, it's like selling themselves in some respects. But there is some connection there. I just really believe, and I talk about it in the back matter on the book. I write that I've always thought that Cody was a sage with fur, and I really do feel that they are profound little beings that happen to be in a fur coat and four legs.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that understanding dogs and the different breeds, and I know there are those that are called mutts, which are a mixture, but I really do think that there are those creatures that want to be with us, and that they are like little sages in fur. Now, you have a special love for Border Collies. Now, Border Collies are not for everybody, because these are hyper dogs. I mean, these are dogs that have to be on the go. They like their games. You have to be willing to walk. So if you're not into doing the activity scene, then find yourself a breed that likes being a couch potato, because Border Collies are not that at all. And Cody was so intelligent. They're known for their intelligence. They're herding dogs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, indeed. I mean, they are. The thing about a Border Collie, and you just, you know, stole the thunder. I mean, if somebody asked me, what would I say to anybody who might want to get one? You have to be active. You have to understand that the dog has to have a job, because that's where the Scottish, you know, breed really originated in Scotland. Obviously, a Scottish breed would. No, they're meant to work. And, you know, there might be an occasional couch potato Border Collie, but generally, I mean, Cody, when she was little, and even into her older years, she needed to be outside at least three times a day for a pretty intense frisbee session, or she would never get destructive. She would just give you this look like, okay, you know, time. It's time now. Come on, let's go. And so you have to be active.
And they're so intelligent, they think.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They really
think.
And you talked about focus.
Oh,
what is it with the focus in Border Collies? Of course, they're herding dogs, but tell us more about that.
Well, I mean, I think that when you see commonly pictures of Border Collies, they have that hypnotic eye stare where they lower their head down, and they're just staring at the sheep, and basically they don't have to bite them or anything, or they don't really do much barking, I don't think. They just give them this eye like, you don't really want to mess with me, do you? You know? And their focus and their intensity is just amazing. I mean, you've read the book, and thank you for doing that, I mean, and for having me on again. The best story is the one where you know, I threw a shovel of snow on her head, you know, in the one part in the book, and I didn't do it on purpose, and she was staring down at her Frisbee, and she didn't even shake the snow off. She just kind of let it melt off because she couldn't lose focus on that Frisbee, because what if I picked it up and she wasn't ready, you know? It was amazing, you know. And the other story I share in the book is when little kids would come up to pet her when she was performing in a park, and she'd deliberately lower her head even further so that they would leave her alone, so that she could keep working. Yeah.
Well, what's so interesting is that Cody reflected a lot of your own personality.
Oh,
she was a very intense dog, very committed, and the thing is, and this is something that I think is so important for people when they get dogs, dependent on the breed, but it really is important. You have to learn about their personalities, and this is a dog, just like you said, when she was given her job, which was catching the Frisbee or whatever you did, your wife was instrumental in saying, you have to be consistent, you have to stick with the plan so that this dog knows what you're doing. And someone's saying, but Donna, you just said they were intelligent. Yes, they are intelligent. And that's why the consistency is so important, because just like you said, they'll sit and look at you and go, okay, what's the drill here? You've changed your mind again. Make up your mind, please. I know my Scottish Terrier does this with me. He just lays down on the floor, rolls his eyes up into the top of his head, and he said, okay, we're doing this again.
Exasperated, yeah.
Was Cody that way with you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I write about in the book that she had what we consider like an eye roll. Like my dad, my late father, he used to have this classic eye roll when he would just be annoyed, and Cody was the same way. Much like, I think I mentioned in the book, Gromit from Wallace and Gromit claymation movies, the dog named Gromit, which is a claymation dog. But the guy, Nick Parks, who makes those films, the dog literally comes alive, and it does this eye roll whenever Wallace, its owner, does something stupid or doesn't, you know, Wallace doesn't like it. I mean, Cody was that way. I mean, we have one video shot, and I haven't turned it to DVD yet, where Andrew's taken video with a movie camera, of course, and or video camera, and I'm throwing the Frisbee for her, and at one point I'm talking to her, like, near the end of it, and I say, hey, Cody, look, there's Mommy, and Cody looks and stares up at Andrea for a second, looks back at me, and rolls her eyes like, yeah, okay, I know who it is. You know, will you throw the damn, throw the darn thing in?
Yeah, let's get busy here. No, you know, let's get real. That's what you're saying. Absolutely. Now, you talked about a fake bark that this dog had, and that's the wonderful thing about this book. You've made Cody's journey a very personal testimony to an animal that you had for a little bit more than 12 years and who had, again, great intelligence. But what was this fake bark?
The fake bark was, and I've been actually self-employed and working at home since 1994. Before then, actually. I mean, when we got Cody, I was self-employed. And I would get calls at home, and she always had to play. And if I couldn't take her outside because it was raining or something, or it was too cold, then I had to toss a ball or a squeaky toy or something. And I was on the phone with a client once, and she started, well, more than one time, and then it occurred to me to try something. I mean, she kept barking. Not really loud barking, incessant barking, but just barking like, okay, pick up the toy, come on, I'm tired of this. And finally I asked the guy if I could put him on hold, and I did, and then I just grabbed her snout and I said, quiet, quiet. It took about 3 or 4 reps, and then she started just clacking her teeth together without any vocal sound at all. So it'd be like, you know. And
so she said, you're going to get my attention, maybe not because you want it, but because it is time. You need to know you have a schedule. Excuse me.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, that is what's so amazing. The animals have their time clocks. They absolutely know. They like certain routines. It's not unlike having a child. And that's one of the fun aspects of your book. You show how you, your family, really, there was such an interactive harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And she really did keep you both on your toes, but she was more your dog than she was Andrea's, although Andrea loved her dearly.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, she always migrated to me, And I just really believe, you know, it's maybe a little metaphysical, but I think that she was a spirit guide with four legs. And, and you know, there's a lot of dog books that come out, and, it, you know, the dog saved my life, the dog taught me this, and it's clearly I trend into that direction. My intention, however, was to make this book as much as possible about the dog and not about me. And, you know, I appreciate you, you know, mentioning about that you've enjoyed it so much, because just hearing that is rewarding to me, because I was just determined and adamant when, you know, publishers are saying, well, maybe you should include more story about your family and your relationship with your wife. And I said, I want to write a book about a dog. And so it's a book for people who really, really love dogs, and really for adults who have gone through the loss, because that loss, when they go away, I mean, yes, another dog can come into your life, but when you've had a real strong connection with an animal like that, and I think you understand, you don't replace it, and I write about it in the book, you don't really ever get over them leaving. It's not like you sit around and constantly cry or something, but the awareness that their presence is no longer there, you know, it's just there. You know, there will never be another dog just like that. You may love another dog. I mean, our you know, from reading the book at the end, the last part of the book, the postscript's about our other dog, Heidi. Yeah, that dog touched us in a profound way too, differently. Okay. Mm-hmm. So
yes.
You know, just
Cody was first position, and then Heidi was second position, but she came into her own in her own special way, which we'll talk about in a moment, because I think your book covers so many different, what do I want to say, experiences and fragments of insight that allow someone to realize that they may one time or another go through this themselves. And that's something that I think is wonderful about your book, because, again, you put the emotions right up front. Now, you found out that Cody, and she was just a little bit over 12 years of age, that something was happening to her. Tell us what was happening to Cody.
Without stealing too much thunder from the written word or the e-book, she was diagnosed with a terminal disease, and it just stunned us, because, you know, this is a thing where you say, well, she got good food, she got proper care, I brushed her teeth every time she ate a meal, you know. I mean, you know, you could just do so much, and then things still happen. It's like in life to human beings. I mean, this is where, and I know from reading some of your bio and your background, where you have to respect the mystery of life, you know. Because
absolutely. But you had a clairaudient experience, because when you found this really hit you very hard, because this was not in your control at all. This was life in its harshest reality. And I think whenever you love someone, whenever, and that can be an animal, it can be a person, it doesn't make any difference, when you love and you find that there is a condition that you absolutely had nothing whatsoever to do with, and as you said, it's life, it happens, dealing with that. Mm-hmm. You had a clairaudient experience where you were told directly, stop being so negative, she's not dead yet.
Right, yeah, exactly. And that was not to overuse the word profound, but it was an important moment, because I got into the self-pity thing once we learned about this. And, you know, I mean, I'm like your, I don't like to stereotype, and I take pieces of all kinds of different things, like astrology, you know, psychic, whatever. I'm interested in all of it. You know, I was born a Virgo, whatever that means to some people, nothing. To me, it means you can tend to be analytical and very precise and perfectionism-oriented, and you think you can control life. And what the Cody experience taught me, finally, at my age, is that the only thing I can ever control is how I respond to anything. Life is just going to keep delivering whatever it's going to deliver. It's one of those things, you know, and that's where you respect the mystery. And you don't see the big picture. And so, you know from reading the book that Cody had something to accomplish. And
oh, yes. Yeah. And I think that she was your teacher in many ways. Now, you have a friend, Nicole. She's an animal communicator, isn't she?
Well, I mean, no, there's actually the person that, there's the animal communicator that's spoken about in the book is Pam, and she's the one we actually had three sessions with, you know, with Cody and Pam during that final year of Cody's life. And then Nicole she does some clairvoyant work, but she may do animal communication, but she's the one who taught me a little bit about the potential of maybe doing some healing work on the dog, I think, to clarify that.
Now, Pam, and again, all of these different aspects of your story, which I think make for wonderful reading. For those of you listening, I'm interviewing Jeff Mazurek, and his book is Cody's Journey, and I'm telling you, this cover of this sweet, sweet baby border collie with these great big dark eyes. She's chewing on a chewy, and she's got it between her paws, and those little dark eyes are rolling up and looking straight at you like saying, I know I look good. Yeah, you got the moment. Yeah, you've got it. Okay, with Pam, she did communicate with Cody because
Correct. You
were so anxious. You just didn't know what to do. You didn't want to have to put Cody down. And one of the things that Pam communicated to you was that Cody was dealing with this a heck of a lot better than you were. Cody actually knew that she was ill. So tell us about the experience with dealing with the animal communicator and how that helped you.
Well, I think that having written a book about spirituality, I had an open mind anyway. And that's one of the things I think that the spiritual journey teaches us, is this concept of being open-minded, because you don't know everything, and it doesn't mean you're gullible for all the new information you get, but you just say, maybe that's possible. So when Cody is diagnosed with traditional medicine as saying, veterinary medicine as saying, okay, we can't do anything for her other than, you know, sustaining in some respect, but it's, you know, there's just nothing we can really do. That's when, through some quirk of fate, a friend of mine, Lisa, said, you know, I know this animal communicator. So, yes, I mean, I was open-minded enough. Some people would dismiss this right away. And within the book, I want to make a point. This isn't really all about animal communication in this work. It's not a fait accompli. It's not like, oh, yeah, this is absolutely definitive proof this exists. It's just my experience. And I've tried to write it in such a way that it could be a mainstream book, even despite the fact that it's a little more metaphysically oriented. In any event, yes, the animal communicator, I was absolutely stunned when she knew things and said things to me during the course of our follow-up call, when she had this conversation with Cody the first time, that literally just floored me. I mean, and that there's stuff that she could not have known, and just the way it was communicated through Pam, you could get Cody's voice. Just, you know what I mean? Like, in the sense of, I know Cody's energy. I know that what was allegedly said to Pam just made immense sense in that moment, and it was very relevant to what was going on at the time. So, it's amazing.
Now, you got Heidi, your other little border collie. You got her, and she was just a ball of fluff like Cody was, but Cody was already 4 years of age. Now, a lot of people would say, gee, you have two females together? Is that such a good idea? It worked out okay, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I think if you go to that one story of Cody's obedience, the book is set up in such a way that it's really a narrative about her last year, but there's a bunch of flashbacks that, you know, to just help people understand who she was and how she was. And, you know, when we got Heidi, because you don't know, I'm going to tell you. When we got Heidi, that's going to be in a third book, by the way, called My Three Heidis. But we'll leave that aside that I've been working on. But Heidi was, definitely. She was a 6-month-old border collie mix, actually, mostly border collie. And you're right on target. Two females. There was some, you know, roughness going on at the time initially, some rough edges. And eventually, Heidi finally just said, well, I guess I just have to accept that other one's the boss. And then they kind of, you know, reluctantly at times agreed to be even close to each other. And then eventually, if you go to the photo gallery in the book, and I know you have it, you can see there's a couple pictures where they're right together. And that was very rare. But, yeah, it was tough for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then after that, over the years, it got to be very, very nice.
Well, I think that's the way it is whenever you bring in a youngster, because the youngster has to be trained. And Heidi, goodness, she reminded me so much of my little Scotty Victor at this time. She got away from you. You thought she would listen. Cody was so obedient. Border collies, once they're trained, they are absolutely awesomely obedient. They like to do what they're told. They have their own minds, though. And Cody did have a few special experiences where she let you know that she knew exactly what she was doing and was being a little sassy. But I remember the story where Heidi, you told Cody to stay, and Heidi is just a puppy, and she takes off, and you have to go after her. Boy, did I have empathy for that one. I did the same thing with Victor when we first got him. I had to slump through snow and all this kind of stuff to finally catch up to him. And every once in a while, he'd turn around and look at me, and he'd go, what is it? Come on, catch up. Come on, get going. What is it with you? Come on, stay here too long. I'm having a blast. Woohoo! And off he'd go again, and I'd go, oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, it was scary.
But they are. They are just wonderful, wonderful characters. Now, with this story, you talk about the fact that when it came time that you really didn't want to have to put Cody down. I don't know of an animal lover anywhere that even wants to think about that. But sometimes that's a reality. And Cody did let you know, and I've had experiences with dogs that they have let us know it's time. Mm-hmm. They know. And this is something I'd like for you to talk about for a little bit because it is so tough. I just had a friend that had to put their animal down about a week or so ago, and it was devastating to them. That is not what they wanted to do. They had hoped that their pet was going to pass away and maybe they just go to sleep, wouldn't wake up, but they didn't want to have to take them into the vet's office. But I really think animals are, goodness, sometimes we're kinder with our animals than we are with human beings, and that's my bias. But I do think they will let us know. Tell us how Cody lets you know.
It's interesting because the Heidi I talk about in the book is the third Heidi we've had, and again, that'll be another book, but Heidi too kind of gave a similar message when she was near the end of her life, which I came home to find Cody was having difficulties intestinally in her final few weeks, and came home from work one night at a client site. I normally work at home, but Andrea had left for a while and came home and found something and then cleaned it up and talked to her in the kitchen. And I just looked at her and right in the eye. I always would talk to her like if I'm talking to you right now. And I just said, Cody, this can't continue unless you want it to, but you need to give me a sign. If you want to continue living this way, that's fine. You know, I'm behind you all the way, but you got to let me know because this is no way for you to live much longer. And she just looked right up at me and walked past me, and then she went ahead into the hallway once she got to the carpeting out of the kitchen and had another accident. And I don't think I couldn't prove it, but I don't have any doubt in my mind that she was saying, this is my demonstration. I am in total agreement with you. I don't want to live in this body anymore either. And was it. And then as I write about in the book, I think when you reach that point as the person, I don't even like the term dog owner because it kind of leaves, we don't own anything in this life. I mean, dog lover might be better, but as the person that's supporting the dog or feeding it or, you know, caring for it all these years, it's never an easy decision. And there's always going to be people that weigh in with this. Says, oh, you know, you should just put him or her out of her misery. No one knows except you when the time is right. And even then, it's still hard. And the dog will give you signs like Cody gave. And sounds like you've had similar signs.
Yes.
They just have a lot more awareness than people realize. What if they're no different than us? It's just that they weren't given the ability to speak. And so deep down within them, there is a soul being or an energy, a spirit, the God force within them, that's just looking out at life as a present moment being who lives in unconditional love virtually all the time. I mean, it's not a bad place to live if they can get a good house. You know,
that's true. Now, I know our time is winding down. I wanted to finish the other portion of the poem that I had started the show off with. It's our time together was too brief for me, and though I had to let you go when the sun urges me on to life, I know instinctively you're beside me, inside me. My arms are empty, but my soul is more complete than it was before you came. And the lessons I learned because of you linger in the quiet moments. How do I describe the connection that is us? With reverence and gratitude. Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, you've got a wonderful book here, and your heart and your feelings and the wonderful stories about this beautiful border collie are really good to read. And again, for those of you that are animal lovers, this is something that you really should add to your website. You can go to codypup.com, CODIPup.com, and you'll find out more information about this fabulous border collie. Jeff Masurek, thank you very much for being my guest today. It has been absolutely wonderful, and do let me know when you come out with your next book.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll certainly do that, and I'll be listening to the rest of the show now.
Thank you, Jeff. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break.